Oh, really? Smiling faces today. Everyone seems to be in a good mood because it's only the fourth day of the session. During the last 10 days, there's a different atmosphere. Everyone's uptight and tense. This is good for now. So far, no harm has been done to us as counties and cities, and I'm sure they wouldn't do anything to hurt us. Carlos is looking out for us. I'm in my best. Anyway, let's begin the meeting with item one, which is the consent calendar. We need a motion on the minutes from October 22nd, 2015.
No move to approve.
A motion and a second.
Second,
thank you. On the next item B, the financial statements, checks, registers, and budget expenditures.
Motion to approve.
We have a motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Did I say all in favor of the first one?
No.
Okay, well, we're all in favor of both.
Thank you.
Okay, let's begin with the introductions for everyone that's here, and maybe a couple of faces that are here. Ari, can we start with you?
Ari Gruning with Envision Utah.
Logan Wild with Morgan County.
Mark Allen, Weber County. Matt Bell, Weber County, and Commissioner Gibson's at a UAC meeting can be.
Michael Jetson, Southern County.
John Petrop, Davis County.
Kevin Long, South Weaver City.
Beverly McFarland, Sunset City.
Mike Caldwell, Weaver County.
Tom Dolan, Sandy.
Andrew Gruber, WFRC.
Bill Applegarth, Riverton.
Colby Cullimore, Castle Heights.
Terry Benson, Utah Transit Authority.
Carlos Braceras, Utah.
Frank Marshall, Grassville City.
Wade Bender, Tula County.
Kim Law, West Jordan City.
Bob
Stevens of Davis County.
So this was Council Staff.
Linda Johnson, where
you
Utah,
as you
Green Utah. Robin
Hutchinson,
Salt Lake City, here on behalf of the
Utah. Jeff Harris, Utah. Gary McLaren, Congressman Love. Jeff Beston,
Council Staff.
Ned Hacker, Wasset from the Eagle Council.
Point to the Council.
Don Christensen, West Valley City.
Misha Christian from UGA.
Tim Ingalls with UGA Project Manager, and with Mayor Dolan, I worked for Kansas City for 10 years.
Same time, Solid State Council Fairlands and Regional Council Staff.
WFRC Staff.
Scott Hess, WFRC Staff.
Julie Gerard, WFRC Staff.
Dory Donner, Regional Council Staff.
Okay, I think Member Skupski is going to join us shortly when she's able to be here, so we'll introduce her when that happens. Welcome her here. So, moving on to the Chairman's Report, the action items that we need to discuss are on the agenda. The first item of business is an action item to endorse the appointments to the Wasatch Front Regional Council Committees. Andrew and the COGS have put a lot of work into this. You should have received a copy everyone's got and highlighted those people who are new on the different committees or have been added to the committees over the last number of months we've been working on this. So. It's an action item, and I'm looking for approval or any suggestions you may have.
Mr. Chair, I'll move we approve as recommended.
Chair, I'll second that. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
The next item of business is the Wasatch Front Region mission and the roles and the mission we've been working on for a couple of months. You've had a chance to see up on the wall there some of the things. I'm going to let Andrew cover that, a couple of little changes that were made. So go ahead, Andrew.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. At our last meeting, we had a full presentation about Wasatch Front Regional Council, its mission, its roles, a great discussion, and you all voted to approve an updated mission statement. There was a suggestion made during that meeting that one thing that had fallen out of the mission statement was about building consensus. And it certainly wasn't our intention to imply that we were moving away from that role. And so as staff, we went back and thought about this and came up with a minor tweak of putting right back in at the beginning, building consensus. Because again, that is so much of what we try to do, bringing together folks from all over the region as represented here today, cities and counties, various modes of transportation, all to work towards our common goals and the common good. So the suggestion that we have for you is to adopt an updated mission statement with the addition of those two words. The other thing I would just note briefly is we had also distributed to you, and this was in your packet, a statement on one page of roles. One of those things is being a convener of various stakeholders. We neglected to reference federal officials in that list of stakeholders, which includes cities and counties, transportation agencies, community and business organizations, state officials, residents, and of course our partners at a national level. And so we just wanted to suggest that that tweak as well. That's not as much of a formal thing. The action that we're suggesting and would obviously welcome any comments or questions is on adding the words builds consensus to the mission statement.
Is everybody okay with that? Are we ready for a motion? This was suggested in our last meeting, so I think it's a good addition.
I'll make a motion.
We have a motion, a second?
Second.
Michael, you got to stay at least the whole meeting. all in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Consensus.
Thank you.
Moving on to the next item, which is the discussion for the new Unified Transportation Plan. Mariel's going to lead us in that.
Thank you, Mayor. So, you may have all heard of a plan that we do here in Utah in a unified way. Utah's Unified Transportation Plan. We have now recently released the latest version of the plan, which, as you know, happens once every 4 years. So this is the 2015 to 2040 Unified Plan. I'm going to just hit on a few highlights of the plan. Our region is growing a lot. Over the past 25, 30 years, we've doubled our population, and we will increase significantly over the next 25 to 30 years. There's a lot of growth population-wise, and also a lot of economic development going on. We have been, as a state, continually rated high in the national rankings for job growth and economic development. How does the Unified Plan play into this? We are very collaborative as agencies here in Utah. We work really closely together, and it's not just that this plan represents all of our respective agencies' plans stapled together. That is not how we put the plans together. We instead, from day one, work together to make sure that our planning is on the same planning cycle so that we plan over the next 4 years together. We have the same planning horizon through 2040 is this plan. And so process-wise, we collaborate together, and also on the technical side. So the modeling that is done to look into the future for where people are going to live and work and the transportation network that's needed to support that, we use the same assumptions and modeling analysis for that. Also in our financial assumptions, what we project out for revenue to pay for our transportation needs. I'm going to talk a little bit about that. Here's our MPO jurisdiction. We have four MPOs in the state, WFRC being the largest, and UDOT plans for the rural areas. Oh, I forgot the drum roll. We are recognized nationally in the FHWA and FTA planning finding from this past year. This is a quote we pulled from it, where they state that the process by which the last three rounds of transportation plans have been developed in Utah has been collaborative and comprehensive, demonstrating the principle that collaboration brings superior results. It serves as a best practice nationally. Last year, when Secretary Fox visited Utah, he literally held up the plan as a national best practice. So it's something that we highlight here in the region, but it's also recognized nationally. Now the plan plans for, the plan looks at a comprehensive transit, highway, and active transportation needs. It also is comprehensive in the way that it plans for not only our capacity needs, but our preservation, maintenance, and operation of the existing system. So here with what we project for the transportation needs overall in our state, we see an $80.5 billion funding need. That includes, as you can see, needs for transit capacity, for transit maintenance, preservation, and operations, as well as road capacity, maintenance, preservation, and operations. But we don't think that all of the money that we would need to fund all of those needs just magically materializes. We don't think that that's fiscally prudent or politically prudent to assume that we can meet all of those needs. Instead, we say, what are those prioritized needs, those top priority needs, and how do we anticipate funding those? So as you can see, from that $80.5 billion, we've condensed that down to the most critical projects and maintenance and preservation needs, and that number is $67.5 billion. Some of you may remember, and you get brownie points if you remember the number, the shortfall number from the 2011 plan, $11.3 billion. You'll see here that based on current revenue streams and what we are projecting out, that we will have significantly closed that gap a little bit more. So from 11.3 to 7.3 billion.
Do we have any idea what Prop 1 could do for us if everyone passed Prop 1?
We do. It's about $113 million statewide for the local option, so for Prop 1.
Per year.
Yeah, so Mayor, so you know, as you know, there were a handful of counties that adopted Prop 1, but the majority of the revenue that would come from Prop 1 would have been from Salt Lake and Utah counties as the largest counties in terms of sale and population. If all of the counties in the state adopted Prop 1, then that $7.3 billion figure would probably come down. I think it's in the range of another $1.5 to $2 billion over the course of
the next 25 years.
Mm-hmm. So the tool is in place to address a significant chunk of that remaining unfunded shortfall.
So I'm thinking about moving to Davis County.
Yep. So of the 10 counties that passed Prop 1 last fall, that the total annual revenues for those 10 counties is about $27.5 million per year. So there's more that we're not showing in the shortfall that could still close that gap even more if more counties enacted it. So a lot of firsts this time around. We now have Utah's Unified Transportation Plan on the web. So for all of you who have smartphones or tablets, you're carrying around the Unified Plan in your pocket. So this is a way that we feel, you know, we can get information out to the public, out to you all quickly. When we have amendments or updates, it will be reflected on the website. A couple of features to highlight. We have an interactive map that shows projects from now through 2040 across the state. And you can click on that map and it'll pop up information specific to each of those projects. It's interactive and statewide. We also have a searchable database. So if you're curious about projects in phase 2 in Davis County, you can search for that. So So it's a pretty cool feature, and it also incorporates what we call elements of responsive design, where, again, you can access it pretty easily from your smartphone or mobile device. So I won't go into a ton of detail here, but another first for us as agencies, and this highlights the collaboration, we have agreed on an initial set of goals for performance-based planning. 5 goals that help us show that the projects in the plan are helping to meet shared objectives and goals. And we have agreed on an initial framework for how we would measure that. And what that does is it helps to just increase transparency more in how the funding that we're using to fund projects is meeting certain goals. Safety, reducing fatality, economic vitality. We all know that transportation is vital for economic vitality. How do we measure that? State of good repair. We know that good infrastructure costs less. Air quality. How are we improving air quality in the way that we're planning appropriately for the transportation system? And mobility and accessibility. How are we making sure that people have choices for how they want to get around? I won't go into all of those measures, but just wanted to highlight 3 of them. So, access to jobs. In May of last year, Harvard released a study that was really compelling for a number of reasons. One of the reasons was that it showed that the biggest indicator, according to the study, for upward socioeconomic mobility is how far someone has to drive or walk or get on a bus to get to their place of employment. So if it takes someone pretty long to get to a place of employment, then it's much harder for them to rise up the income ladder. So how can we measure access to jobs as a way of showing that the projects in the plan are helping to improve the overall economy and provide choices for people in finding those jobs? Here you'll see in the graph, in the blues, the dark blues, shows current conditions, and it's indicating that how easily is it for someone to get to a job in 20 minutes? How many jobs can they access within 20 minutes in a car today? And then the light blue shows how many jobs would they be able to access in 2040 via car. The green is showing in 2015 conditions for the dark green, in 40 minutes, how long it would take for someone to get and access, a certain number of jobs via transit. And then the light green is showing in 2040. So you can see virtually across the state and across mode and across jurisdiction that there is an increase in the sheer number of jobs that people can access within a reasonable amount of time. So that's significant. Air quality. We project a 68% reduction in mobile source emissions between now and 2040. That largely will come because of better fuels and better technology, so Tier 3 fuels and Tier 3 vehicles. It also, though, comes from providing those choices for people so that they're not driving alone in their car. And then lastly, a measure that helps to capture not only the time that we would be stuck in traffic if we did not implement the plan, but also a measure that shows just how much time we're saving just driving places. So in 2040, the average Utah household, and this is a very compelling measure that we haven't had before, the average Utah household would spend 3.5 fewer days driving in their car if we were to implement the projects in the Unified Plan. Think about that time and how those years add up over a lifetime. Very compelling. This is due to the capacity projects in the plan that help to get people more quickly to their the places that they want to go, but also because of the coordination between land use and transportation, so that we're planning better for where people are going to live and work and make sure that they have opportunities to do that more closely together. And lastly, our transportation system, when it works well, you don't notice it, but you shouldn't notice it. the transportation system is there to work well and to be not an end in and of itself, but a means to an end. It helps to support our quality of life, and that is very important, and we hope that we can continue to work collaboratively with our partners to make make Utah a better place to live, work, and recreate.
Thank you.
You know, we give out brownie points to any members of the staff who talk about the unified plan here.
I understand this place should get a tattoo of it on your shoulder.
Yeah.
We'll be handing it out to our appropriations committee tomorrow morning.
Brownie points, good. There you go.
Now, legislative preview. Andrew's giving me some, I have a question on this, but that I didn't want to pass up. I don't want to ask it with the whole board here. Have we ever, or are we capable of doing a PR campaign? Because as you come here and you listen to all the things that are happening, and we're showing solutions to the problems that the public is concerned about, that message really never gets to the public. It never gets to your citizens in your communities that, yes, there is a plan that's fixing the air quality. These, you know, I've heard mentioned on TVs that the improvements that have made over the last 15 years, but we have, as far as I'm concerned, individually, and if you get it through the public media, we get a little bit of things, but it doesn't sell newspapers to know that there's a solution. So is it possible for we as the Wasatch Front Regional Council to have, I'm just as a word, a PR campaign that would continuously let this information out?
Well, the basic answer is yes, in that we can communicate information to the public. So there's a distinction technically between advocacy and providing information. And what it sounds to me, Mayor, that you're talking about is sharing information about plans and solutions for the future, which is something that is a legitimate use of our resources and our time, just as it is for you as individual cities. And as you know, we've also, over the years, coordinated closely with the business community and also other community-based organizations on sharing messages about solutions that exist for air quality, for transportation, for economic development.
Well, I know that UTA is in the process right now of doing a whole campaign to reintroduce people to all the good things that public transportation does to us. How do you as members feel about us looking at some way that we can continuously put out information that the public can start to grasp? It doesn't happen in one or two announcements or one newspaper article or interview or things like that, but would you be willing to let us go look through something like that?
Certainly. That's a great idea. I mean, I think we all have...
I have one great idea in my year, so this is it.
We all have... Many of us have newspapers that go out on some kind of schedule. We all have websites. And if we could just have a website about transportation and youth, we could all plug into those things on a regular basis.
I know most of us have some kind of mechanism via our own in-house or the local newspapers or your community newspapers, but it doesn't seem to get the same spread as it would if we had a real, brought a group on and said, okay, you keep producing for us something that keeps the public aware. So they know we're not sitting on our hands. We know that the legislature is taking this very serious to solving these problems. I think that probably, even though we were limited of what we could do with Prop 1, if we could still build our story, then I think people would not be separating local roads out from public transit. They'd see it as one of the things we try to sell is it's a system. We just can't do one thing and forget about the other. We've got to build this system in order for us to achieve the goals that we set in our long-range planning. So we'll take that. If you're agreeable to that as a group, then we'll... I don't think I need a motion, do we?
No, I'll make the motion.
I got a lot of nods. So
I'll make a motion that we continue on exploring that path.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, I might just add in response to that unanimous direction, that's exciting to us. And we work very closely already with the outreach folks at UDOT, UTA, the counties, and the cities. But with your direction and input, if you can ask the folks that work in your individual communities, if they're willing to engage with us and you know, work collaboratively on this, we can magnify that voice if we bring folks together around these issues. So I think that would be our request back to you, and we can move forward.
Thank you. Before we move forward, welcome Mayor Witkowski for joining us as one of our new members. We've already voted you in, so you're stuck with us. On the items at the legislature, potential UTA issues that are coming up, I know that there's going to be something addressed with UTA, but I don't think we, first of all, I don't know, we don't have a particular position, but my input, and I've talked to UTA a little bit about this, is that our communities and our citizens have invested hundreds of millions of dollars of tax revenue into the public transportation system. So we really have a say in where we're going to go, and I think it's important for us to let that be known at the legislative level. I haven't seen any bills or heard any bills yet that are coming up other than just rumors. But I think we, as the Wasatch Front Regional Council and individual elected officials, need to be engaged in that discussion because, again, the investments have been made, and despite of what public opinion is and such, again, it's, again, part of the long-range plan that we, for the successes of what we're trying to accomplish at the Wasatch Front. Divert sales tax from transportation to water. That's another thing that's going on. Does anyone like to address that to know what it is? I know what it is, but basically, the legislature, Senator Adams, I believe it is, we also have a huge problem of the long-term infrastructure for water in the state. And the water districts have coalesced behind their 2060 plan that calls for long-term investment. The way it was explained to me is they're looking at a loan fund that the state would create that the users would pay back. In other words, it's not a free ride. It would be money borrowed from this fund and then paid back by the users. And there'll be a lot of discussion on that. But any more discussion on that that people would like to, if you haven't heard of it?
Mayor? Yeah. Some of my constituents was very concerned about this, as they was one of the groups that did pass the Proposition 1, and they were being sold the idea that they were passing this so that they could get more road money to get the roads put back into a good level to be able to drive on. And the question that was asked of me was, so we approved that, so now there's another fund of money, and now they're already starting to borrow it to do water. Water ought to be done on water itself. And I think that the newspaper didn't help anybody on this because they only threw just a little bit of information there, and so all they did was stir the cats up, if you will, and didn't provide any answers to it.
Carlos can address this far better than I can, but Prop 1's a local road.
I understand, but I think they connect the two.
Yeah. And I don't know if, Mayor, would you, I could give a little history, Andrew. I don't know if what I said yesterday in committee would be helpful. Do you think that
Please.
Was history?
Yeah, I do.
This goes back to the early 90s, actually, and to some deals that were made. Basically, an eighth of a cent was set aside. And there was some, it was actually some wheeling and dealing between water and transportation at the time. And it was split in half. And a 16th went to the cities and counties in the early 90s and for transportation. And the other 16th stayed with water. Fast forward to 2006, then Representative Lockhart ran a bill that was supported by the League, UAC, and the department. We didn't create this. We said, fine. And that's when they changed the B&C distribution from 25-75 to 30-70 in exchange for that percentage. It was initiated actually by the league to make that exchange. We said, okay, so that 1/16th now generates about $35.5 million, and it sits in our transportation fund. So that's our operation and maintenance side of things. And so that's the side that, basically we got the gas tax increase. We'll see about $55 million. This is a $35 million hit out of that fund. Senator Adams doesn't want to hurt the operation and maintenance, so he proposes to take the 35 out of the transportation investment fund, the capacity fund, and put that into the transportation fund to backfill it. So that's what he's trying to do. We had proposed, as Governor Herbert's budget, to take $10 million in FY17 out of the transportation investment fund. So my testimony was basically that this would leave about a $25 million hole in our TIP, which means we would have to slow down a few projects that are in that transportation investment fund.
So, Mayor, you can explain that to your constituents. So.
Yeah, I got that. It's clear as mud.
Anyway. As long as it comes from Tooele County.
Yeah.
Just those counties that passed Prop 1.
Anyway. Well, I was enjoying the part where I knew the county got some of this, and then the commissioner didn't give it back.
Okay, that's something that we can follow as it goes along. And one of the key issues every year is the appropriation to the Wasatch Front Regional Council. We have been asking for this to be an ongoing commitment to how the legislature helps us fund. I think it's $70,000. Is that right?
Well,
we're asking for it, new money.
So we get $70,000 as ongoing already. And we're asking last year for that to be increased so that the total ongoing that comes to us is $140,000.
And as it was explained to me, it was committed that would happen. It just fell apart at the last part of the legislature. And it's been recommitted that will do that again. So it'll actually come on for the ongoing funds. All I can tell you is all the years I've been here, we've been asking the legislature, and they've been off and on whether or not they support that amount. But it really is essential for us to have that ongoing fund so we know we're getting that money every year. So if we call on you to do some lobbying for some of your legislators, that's what it's for.
Mayor, on that point, may I just briefly note, so Senator Adams and Representative D are members of the council from the Senate and the House. They're obviously not able to be here today because they're at the Capitol. But I spoke to both of them over the last few days, and they wanted me to pass on to you, first of all, on that point, with the appropriation, that they are going to be seeking having that appropriation, the full amount, made ongoing. And while I'm at it, they also wanted to express to you that they value all of the work that you do through the Wasatch Front Regional Council, producing the plans, and they've relied on them heavily over the years. And finally, both said, if there are any issues that you have, either individually or collectively, that you want them to be aware of and bring forward in the legislature, they are very open and willing to hear from us collectively or any of you individually.
Thank you. So, any more discussions that you might want to have in the legislative session that you see that hasn't been brought up right now? I'm sure we'll see them coming up weekly. We'll be calling on you as elected officials to help us work through, whether it's through UAC or from the league, some things that will be beneficial to all of us. So with that, we'll move into service awards.
May I?
Yes.
Thank you.
That's you.
Okay, that's me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now I get to do one of my favorite things at WFRC, which is to recognize our great staff. You know that we have a practice here on every 5 years of service from an employee, awarding them and recognizing them. And today we have two terrific staff members that we're going to be recognizing. Now, you may ask, well, why do we have this modeling and data flow chart up on the screen here? And the reason for that is because both of the employees, John and Susie, John, raise your hand, John Larson, Susie Swim, right there, they are both key members of our modeling and data group.
And I am not going to go through this here, okay? We can do a master class. John and Susie can do a master class and how this works, if any of you want it in the future. But the point of showing you this is the work that is done here has as its very backbone sophisticated modeling tools and extensive data, so that it's not just the engagement and training, engagement of all of you around the table and around the community, but there's sophisticated analytical tools and data that underpin and inform the work that we do, that help us understand the effectiveness of the decisions we're making now out decades into the future. And I would say also, Carlos and Jerry, that a lot of this modeling work also underpins the planning that UDOT and UTA do. So it's very, very important. And it's reflected, that's the simplified version that you're seeing in front of you. So we have this group of folks, great folks at our office, that we've nicknamed the Awesome Group, because that's what they are. And I'm going to talk just a minute about them. Susie, first, is celebrating 10 years. We are celebrating 10 years of having Susie at WFRC. She's skilled in geographic information systems, GIS, which is a key part of our ability to manage that data and then also communicate our technical work. Over the last 2 years, Susie has also embraced the challenge of learning travel demand forecasting and is capable at running our models and has applied the model to support our development of our regional transportation plans and the unified transportation plan. Susie is meticulous and detail-oriented, and she's also known for her positive attitude and her sunny disposition. If something needs to be done right, you go to Susie and ask for it. She's also really active on our wellness committee, and she's a sports nut, fair to say, right, Susie? Which extends to going to a lot of jazz and BYU football games and regularly winning WFRC's basketball and bowling tournaments, which just really gets me. I'll get you one of these days, Susie. And then let me talk about John Larson, who for 5 years has been the lead of our awesome group, our modeling and data group. And he leads that group with passion and creativity. And really with the help of John's leadership, what the group is doing, it's technical and it's detailed, but really what they're doing is exploring how to better understand community needs and transportation now and into the future. And what John does that I value so greatly is he sees the intersection between data and technical issues and the real world, and helps us bring those things together, and always has an eye towards how we can prepare for the future. John came to WFRC from the private sector, as did many of our employees. He was with Barron Peers, and he's very active in the community. He's the incoming chair of the Utah chapter of the Congress for New Urbanism, and he's also on the board of the Utah Institute of Traffic Engineers. And the last thing I want to say about him, our staff appreciates John for many reasons. Not the least of which is because he's always looking for opportunities for the members of his team to grow and learn and engage their creativity. He lives in Mill Creek with his wife and his three children, BYU grad. So, members of the council, please help me thank and express our appreciation for both Susie and John. We have little certificates that we'll give them, and we'll take a picture. Where's Scott? Scott's going to take a picture.
Just you or who?
Hmm?
Me?
You! You, Mr. Chairman.
I'm going to ruin it.
That's one of your most important duties.
There you go.
This baby.
There you go. Okay, we're crunching.
You go around.
Yeah.
So now you get it. We renewed the contract with our director for 5 years. And now you know why it looks so good. I thought it was all you.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much. Thanks.
I'll sign it later.
Okay.
Now we move to item 3, which is public comment. Is anyone here from the public who would like to address the board? Seeing none, we'll move to item 4, the Regional Growth Committee, Commissioner Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We had a great Regional Growth Committee meeting last week, and
We have three items that we would like to discuss today. The first is about our amendments to the 2015-2040 Regional Transportation Plan. As you guys know, the Regional Transportation Plan is the blueprint for the long-term transportation needs here in for roads, transit, and active transportation. But periodically, the plan requires adjustment. In the last council meeting, these proposed amendments were introduced and discussed. And we've made a recommendation to the council to adopt these amendments. We're going to have Jory talk about those and explain those. So, Jory can make that thing work out there.
Thank you, Commissioner.
You bet.
Quick presentation of thank you for letting me provide an update on our RTP and amendment process overview. We just recently adopted our regional transportation plan in May of 2015. We know, even with all the hard work, the 4 years that goes in that preparation, that it's not set in stone. Things come up, and periodically we'll need to address those the needs or changes. And so we'd like to start doing it once a year, and hopefully, just as an FYI, if you have any potential amendments, if you could get in contact with me or somebody at WFRC by March timeframe, that would work out perfectly. Collaborative, we work very closely with UDOT, UTA, the local communities on these amendments. Part of our RTP amendment process is they need to be financially constrained. We have to take them out to public review if they're of a certain level. And we also need to make sure they conform to the air quality conformity standards if they're also of a certain status of a type of amendment. The projects that are in your packet, there's a lot more detail, but this is a high-level summary. We presented these projects at the October 2015 council meeting, where the council approved us to go out for public comment between November and December of this last year. We did not receive any comments on those projects. The project's kind of a high-level category. You have Highway 89 up in Davis County. There's some interchange of projects along with some other shuffling of phasing to move those up to phase one. The Ogden-Weber State University corridor, it's an alignment change and a mode change to be consistent with the locally preferred alternative as part of that environmental study.
For BRT.
For bus rapid transit. Gordon Avenue is a small piece that was in phase two that would connect to the Highway 89 interchange, and so that one, you'd need the road to connect to an interchange, or the interchanges don't work, right, Carlos? We got I-15 improvements in Salt Lake County, which include auxiliary lanes, I-15, I-215, managed motorways, and a general purpose southbound on I-15, and then also I-15 operational projects in Weber and Davis County. Staff have reviewed these projects. They meet the financial constraints, and they also meet air quality conformity standards. And so that kind of really ends my presentation. A couple other things, doesn't end it, I guess. I back up 2 seconds. At the RGC meeting, we had a really great discussion around the RGC, including public comments about BMT, air quality, land use, vehicle miles traveled, and the BMT growth for population. And it was a really good discussion. I mean, it kind of took a life of its own, but it was fun, and I think it was really hearty with that. But the RGC did make a recommendation to approve the amendments and ask that you do the same, I guess.
Let me just note, Jory, that the reason that Jory went through these quickly and didn't do a presentation on each of the projects is because these were already presented to you at the last meeting before the public comment period. If anybody wants to dig into the details, Jory is prepared to go over all of them, or any of them.
And I have Jim with UTA and Jeff with UDOT to help if there's any really tough questions. Also, should be noted that we have updated the interactive map to reflect these changes accordingly. Commissioner?
If there's no questions, I'd like to make a motion to approve the proposed amendments to the 2015-2040 RTP as presented.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
Our next item, Mr. Chair, is our 2019 to 2015 plan that we're working on. Ted's going to give a brief update on the next phases of the planning process.
So even though the ink is just drawing on the unified plan and we're already amending our last plan, we're looking out to the additional needs and the emerging needs in the region. And the new plan goes out 10 extra years, and there's a lot of new opportunities for us to explore how we together can best meet the transportation needs here in our region. So we talked a bit about this, and we talked about some of the overarching objectives for that plan at the last meeting. And I'm just going to highlight the big four. We're always striving to do a better job at engaging communities, agencies, stakeholders, the public in the planning process. We're going to strive even harder to do that. And part and parcel of that is coordinating local land decisions with regional transportation. How do we together do a great job of that with an eye towards creating a great quality of life in our region? The way to know that we're doing that, of course, or to help, is to have that be based on a performance-based system. So we're not guessing. We use metrics to inform, you know, does this set of decisions or that set of decisions, which one do a better job, let's say, for air quality? So we're working hard on that. Actually, I got ahead of myself. That was four. You were wondering what I was doing there. I was just checking to see if you're paying attention. That's all I was doing. So number four, utilize a performance-based approach to planning, including a focus on economic performance. So this is an effort that we are engaging in with our partners to especially build metrics in those areas. And then, of course, continuing to focus on active transportation, mainly because it's kind of the new mode on the block, right? We're not letting our focus down on transit and roads, but working to integrate modal considerations together. So one of the things that we do that is super fun and really satisfying about working at Wasatch Front is that we get in our time machine, just like Michael J. Fox. This actually happens to be, right, 2015, which is ironic, but they did have hoverboards and flying police vehicles. But the bottom line here is we get to, together, engage in this process of looking at transportation ideas and how they work with different ways that growth might unfold and really have a nice, robust conversation about what different kinds of combinations and solutions really work the best. So it's a great process. It's an opportunity for us to really together say, what is the future that we're going to choose together, and how do we work towards that, each in our own sphere. And part of the reason why we focus so much on coordinating local development decisions with regional transportation is because our time frames are different. You know, local governments tend to plan 20 years out, and most plans are at least 5 years old. But our time frame is 30 years out, so we need to do that of necessity. And it's an opportunity, really, for you as local governments to say, well, you know, let's say that I'm interested in an upgrade to a transit line in my neck of the woods. Well, one way I could do that, perhaps, is by coordinating with the communities next to me that are also along that route and think through. You know, one way to think of it is, how do we bid for ridership with our development patterns? And if that's not of interest, then at least you get to see how development patterns relate to, let's say, your infrastructure goals. So there's a lot of specific reasons to do that. So what we're going to explore then with you in a collaborative process are best in place, worst places for growth, how growth unfolds, think the mix of uses in each part of the region, housing mix, how much growth on infill land or greenfield, where and what type of centers, and how those work with different infrastructure ideas and needs. And so one of the big differences in this planning cycle that is different from the last time is that we're going to explore that on a sub-regional or small area basis. We think it makes a lot of sense for you to sit down with, let's say, the three municipalities and unincorporated areas nearest you and roll up your sleeves and say, let's look at how the future unfolds in this area. And you have a conversation among people that you are used to coordinating and at a geographic scale that is comfortable and yet still highlights regional transportation considerations. So we're going to do this. This is the last slide, blessedly so. We're going to do this on a small area basis. This map, everybody should have this, and if you don't, we can get them to you. 10 different small areas. The first meeting is on April 6th in Clinton, which is awesome. And you can get a sense of which cities unincorporated areas you'll be working with. And so with that, Commissioner, that concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, Ted, can I, Commissioner, I just note that you have this map. We are going to be sending out information about this, electronic invitations, so take a look, but we will be communicating about this process and these meetings in a lot more detail with you.
Great.
Well, I think it would be great if you'll really engage groups of citizens within your community. It'll make a lot of difference as to what your city looks like in 20 years from now if you get everybody involved and let them have some input into it. So that's what the real goal is here, is to get as much community input as possible. Right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Thanks, Ted.
Thank you.
Our final theme, Mr. Chair, is periodically the council takes an opportunity to feature a community spotlight focusing on the looking at the ways communities are addressing growth and transportation challenges and how they're partnering with Wasatch Front. So today we're pleased to have Mayor Applegarth share some of the spotlight with Riverton City. Mayor?
Thank you very much. Next to talking about my grandchildren, my city is the favorite thing to talk about.
Can I do something unorthodox? I failed to mention that we are exploring small area meetings with Morgan and Tooele with them, okay? So that you're not on the list right now, but we are actively going to explore that. And this is something that meetings are being set up currently. Thank you, and I apologize.
Yeah, these guys are going to tackle you on your way.
Thank you.
It's absolutely the case.
And so, Susie, would you put the slide up of Riverton? Well, I've been mayor for 10 years and 26 days. And so when I became mayor 10 years ago, I did not have a big interest in transportation in a natural way. But our city was in a very bad way in transportation. We did not have a city road that had more than 2.5 lanes. And the reason I say 2.5 lanes, we say 2.5 lanes, is we didn't have a third lane down the middle, but we did at certain corners, we had a left turn lane in there. And we were dying. And the previous city manager came to the council and wanted a big tax increase, as everybody always does, and the council just threw him out the door, so to speak. And so we didn't have that. And so I came in as a new mayor, in a little over a mile section of 134, it would take people from Harriman to come down, and it would take them 35 to 40 minutes to go that mile in the morning. It was that kind of gridlock. One of our city councilmen had a great idea, make it a toll road. The press picked it up, and we made the laughing stocks of the whole area because of that. But we had a new city manager, Lance Blackwood, came on 6 months after I did, so he's been with us 9.5 years. And Lance has a real feel for finance and how to finance things and how to accomplish stuff. So I immediately got involved with Wasatch Front Regional, learning all I could about different transportation funding and so forth, got on a COG committee for right away, and just immersed myself in transportation. And at that time, we were just worried about roads. That's all we could be worried about. Think of active transportation or transit. There was no thought that way at all. We had to put all of our efforts in roads. UDOT, before that, while I was on the council, before that, had widened 126 in the state part of 126. And we were very grateful for that. So 126 was widened from Bangor Highway to the east, to our east border of the Jordan River. To the west, between Bangor Highway and Harriman, is a local road. And so that was our responsibility. And so Wasatch Front Regional helped in many, many ways, and UDOT has spent millions and millions of dollars in our area on roads. And so during that time, we went together, we went and so forth. Our, we had a great city engineer, but he didn't know how to get funding, the grants and so forth. And so during that time, we widened this two-lane road in that mile from two to five lanes, and the city paid 100% of it. And then that city manager, or that city engineer, pardon me, went to work for the county, and we hired, we stole, and then hired, Grace Robertson from West Valley. And the mayor at that time told me if I took one more employee from them, that it was, I was going to have to name our city, Riverton City, a subsidy of West Valley. And so Trace knows how to do a lot of things. He's a very experienced engineer. He knew how to get us involved in into the transportation funding in an appropriate way. And so if we look at roads, there are several things that I would just mention. One is we turned that two-lane road into a five-lane throwaway road, which actually UDOT, our region director at that time, recommended a throwaway road, which I was grateful for, and so we could even just get it funded. And then with the help of Wasatch Front Regional and UDOT, we turned, we made a seven-lane road, concrete seven-lane road, and that we were able to get grants for 94% of that and 6% off of ours. Also on that, we had an intersection that was failing at Bangor and 134. UDOT redid the intersection for us, and we appreciated that. We now have UDOT is widening the last stretch of Redwood Road in Salt Lake County that needs to be widened, and that's a terrific gift as well. So we went to work on roads, and when we hired Trace, he helped us in every way to take our local roads and design them, and then to increase that the capacity of those roads. And so right now we're to the point where we have our roads are functioning well. We have some of them starting to fail, like 126 is starting to fail. About a C, it's not during rush hour traffic, but it's still manageable and workable in that ride as we go along. And so all of a sudden, I had to learn all this road. First, you have to learn the vocabulary because it's a whole different language than English. They don't use words; they use letters. You have to know what all this stuff means. And so, I immersed myself in that. And there were some great mayors, Mayor Dolan one, that tutored and helped me through this process as we went along. And so, I would say right now, as Redwood Road gets finished in the next 2 years, is the anticipation, maybe two and a half. We will be at the point where our roads are all functional and white. Well, we about 2007, 2008, I was sitting in this room here, and they were talking about transit. And nobody even knew where Riverton was almost when we started this. And there was nothing on the transit map for us in that regard. And if you've been around me much, you know I'm a very quiet, shy person. And so in that meeting, I spoke out and asked that a study be done in the southwest part of the valley for transit corridors. And I pledged in that discussion here $200,000 from Riverton for that study. And then I went back to the city and I told Lance that he had to find $200,000 for the study. He had to find that. And then as we went on, we raised $500,000 from our part. We got partners from the other parts of the valley to contribute the other $500,000. And then UTA, I think it was a $2 million study, they did the other million. And that study, we've had two of them now. One was finished in 2010. The other part of that is we're in public comment period to move it on to the next step, which will be environmental study. And so on this map, you will see this is the transit corridor, and then it'll go down 126, somehow fitting through there. And so this is the 134 I was talking about. It's a cement road, obviously a Bangor Highway, the Mountain View Corridor at 126. And so we've just had development occur in what is SLR land, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints farmland, and this area here, all this vacant land, and down here to our border with Harriman. We've just passed that with the council, and we have the development going in between 134 and 132. We have the development, no, it's right here, this one here, 134 and 132, we have a commercial development that's a mirror of Station Park in Farmington, if you've been to that development. So that's just been all approved. They're breaking, getting ready to break ground on that this summer and move forth with that. Okay, so then as we've gone along, so I first learned about roads, and then Jeff Hawker, our assistant city manager, knows all about transit. And I can't tell you how many hours I spent with Jeff learning about transit and learning the right words again about transit. And the mayor of Harriman and the mayor of Draper, we have a very close working relationship. And we've been back to Washington, D.C. twice. We've been with the Denver transit office and so forth. And we're just together on this whole transit project, knowing now all we want to do is buy right away, get that done, because I wasn't in government, but Bangor Highway, they were ripping out new homes, builders were building, and not able to stop that because the route wasn't in yet, because there was a lot, it wasn't anybody's fault, it was just a lot of controversy. So as this develops, we have this route. And I think it's fair to say we will get all this land donated by the developer there. We made it part of his open space credit that he could use, was to donate the transit. So we have transit going, and we have the roads going very well and moving in that direction. The next part of this is in the development. Those of you that know our mayor, you know how hard it is to rezone everything. I've been had near-death experiences in council meetings with rezoning. So we came up with the idea not to specifically rezone this into exact densities, but we did a 7 unit to the acre overall gross rezone. For all, there's about a little over 600 acres in here, and 500 will be for residential office space. So we've got 3,500 units that can be there, and they can choose, the landowner, SLR, can put densities where they want, because we want to create a true transit TOD in order to justify it. And so we've got that part of it, too, in that regard. And so then I started going to Railvolutions. Jeff got me to go to Railvolutions, and I've been to three of them, I think, three or four. And so when I was in Minneapolis, my wife loves to ride bikes, and I hate it. You know, I'm just not a bike rider. And she likes to ride it for 50 miles. I mean, I can't imagine this. 50 miles, 30 miles. She's older now, so she's down to about 20 or 25, but I was always supportive. I drove in the car and picked her up. I did my part. I went to Minneapolis, and as you know, if you've been to Minneapolis, it's an extremely rich, active transportation city. And I learned all I could from them in Minneapolis about what they had. And when I came back, Trace Robinson and I met, and Trace just jumped on this active transportation as well. And so we're grateful for what's happened with that. Salt Lake County and Wasatch Front Regional has funded, in a combination, they funded some grants where we have a master, active transportation master plan that we're ready to unveil to our citizens within the next 45 days. And we will do that. We also started some lane paintings, because paint is cheap, and we got some grants to help for that as well, where we're adding bike lanes, protected bike lanes, where we have the width, we're adding bike lanes to city streets as well. We also have canals in our area, and we want to get involved with canals on the canal roads of turning those into bike paths, running paths, so forth in that regard. And so we moved to active transportation because we have a young city, and they don't have gray hair at all, let alone all the gray hair I have. And they like to ride bikes, and they like to run. My wife has run a marathon, and I helped her there too. So I'm a walker, and I walk a lot. But the younger people really want that in our area, as well as older people are into it. And so now we are moving forward with active transportation and attempting to do everything we can in that way. And I just appreciate the support from UDOT, from Wasatch Front Regional, from our neighbors, the neighboring cities, in that regard. And I don't know where you are in your evolution of things, because every city is different. And you have to take it and fill your most important needs first. But I'm glad we're at the point now where we're focusing on active transportation, and I think it will be wonderful for us. When I ran for city council 14 years ago, I was a half-acre man, third acres, and quarter acres were high density. Staff can't believe. They think I've been possessed by some outer space person. I understand the need and the desire and the market for multi-family housing. And although we have to be careful politically still, very careful, we are providing that in our city to meet the needs of the public. Because of our geography, and every city will be different, because of our geography, we have two ways to get out of Riverton towards the east. One is 126, and the other is Bangor Highway. We have a river, we have sensitive land, we have canals. We desperately, and I have a high interest in public transportation, and I feel very strongly about that. And I was sad, very sad, when Prop 1 did pass, like all of you in Salt Lake County here. And I was sad for two major reasons. One, our local road maintenance, but equally concerned with transit and money to go. Thank you for allowing me to ramble for a few minutes. If you had had lunch with me, we ended up talking to the manager of this restaurant that's in a different city than ours. And before I left, I had to email the CEO, because they're looking at putting another restaurant in Salt Lake Valley. I had his email, the CEO, and the phone number, because I want that one. I love that restaurant, and I want it in our project. Let's see what we do.
Mr. Chairman, that's all we have.
Thank you, Commissioner. Moving on to item 5, Transportation Committee. Mayor Applegarth, you're on again.
Okay. This will be more professional. Because others are presenting. Under 5, we have two items. The first one will be an action item, and then the next one after we vote on the action item will go to the information item. This is board modifications coming out of Transcom that were recommended for your consideration. Ben will do the first part of this presentation, and then Carlos will do the second part of this presentation.
Thank you, Mayor. Not quite sure I can come close to the comparison there, Mayor. You did a wonderful job. It is exciting. In the Transportation Improvement Program, where it's a six-year program of projects that actually have funding, to see when they get on the ground and they're underway and things are moving forward, and there's a lot of combined effort between active transportation and the highway development as well as transit implementation. And so it's an exciting part of the job that we have. Today, as we have the third board modification to the Transportation Improvement Program, it's the six-year plan of highway and transit projects that will implement the highway and the transit long-range plans that have been identified by this body and approved and recommended. It'll also address the short-range needs, and it'll take care of the maintenance and the preservation of our existing systems. Today, in review, in your packet, you'll have a copy of the resolution, and in that packet, you'll have a copy of this table. And this table identifies both requests or both modifications to the existing 2016-2021 Transportation Improvement Program. First project there is on I-215. This is a project that we talked about some months ago on I-215. It takes several projects and combines them in together. The purpose of today's request, though, is to add a few more dollars to that project due to some cost savings on another project that was initially part of this same area or in the same location. So for a quick review, what this will do is a pavement reconstruction on I-215 from 4700 South all the way up to SR-201. It'll also include the pavement reconstruction on I-215 from 3rd East up to Redwood Road. Now, there was a section that you'll recall almost a year ago, well, 6 months ago, this project from 3rd East to Redwood Road was cut in half. The section that went from Redwood Road to 3rd East was done earlier in the year. This project will include the portion that will go from 3rd East to Redwood Road westbound. This project will also include some improvements on 4700 South with some right turn lanes directly on to southbound I-215, as well as add an additional ramp to the on-ramp to northbound I-215. It'll address the structure on 215 and 201. And it'll also address ramp metering along various of the intersections or interchanges there on I-215. Now, combining this project does multiple things. The department has done a significant and a wonderful job about finding the best way to save the most money. And by combining all these projects, not only will we save cost savings, but by synchronizing the construction of all of this effort, it'll minimize the impacts to the traffic. So the increased funding of $1.4 million comes from the cost savings on the project that went from Redwood Road up to 3rd East, and it'll make this total project amount of $105 plus million. Any questions on that project? Then the next part of this amendment, I believe, will be presented there with Carlos.
Do you want me to present these projects?
Would you be willing, Carlos, to take a few minutes and explain? Because there's a lot of projects incorporated in the modifications to the TIF. So, and we know that you've been talking about this with the commission and others, so we figured the most efficient thing would be to turn to you and you can explain in however way you'd like.
I will do that. Ben, is it okay if I do it from here and you can point at the projects that we...
You bet. And I do, maybe for reference, Carlos, this is the sheet we'll be referencing here that's included in your packet.
Yeah, and if you could leave that there just for a minute and just explain what you see here. So what you see here is what the commission has approved for projects out of the TIF, and it includes the cash flow, so that's way across the year. So you can see we programmed this out through 2022. There's still revenues in 2022. We've gone out an awfully long way, so barring any unexpected pressures, I will not be asking the commission to program out any farther right now until we start to get a little farther along in implementing this plan. What's in white was approved prior last April by the commission and the council. There was some savings, some good bids on jobs. We received a really good bid on the Mountain View Corridor project that goes from 54 to 41 and some other projects. And so the commission put out for public comment in December. The projects that you see listed in the different colors there, the blue colors are the ones that I believe are in this area, right, Ben?
Correct.
In the Gloucester's front area. And so I'll just touch on those and maybe we can go to the next slide. So what we're showing here is the first project is a project that actually had $100 million sitting in it for over a year and a half. And what we decided between us and Wasatch Front is we were going to do a step back. We did a much more comprehensive analysis of short-term and long-term needs. And this is an additional general purpose lane from SR-201 going southbound to 123rd. It's also going to include, this is where the highest congestion in the entire state is right now. And it's also going to include a adjustments to the I-215, I-15 interchange. So those of you that travel 215 on the west side and go eastbound to go southbound, that backs up every day. We basically have a lane balance problem, so we've got four lanes, two lanes from each direction of 215, being essentially funneled down to three lanes and then merging into one lane on I-15, which goes south there by 72. So we're going to change the entry points for the southbound and eastbound and allow more time for that traffic to settle down. This will make a very quick, immediate benefit once we're able to get to this. What we're doing is we're actually combining this with the project. If you look down on, where's the 7200 book? Oh, we're just including it in there, aren't we, Ben? We took a project of widening at 72. If you can think about 72 south and going west, there's a lot of development taking place in the Midvale area. Somebody keeps whispering that in my ear. And kicking my shins. And what's been preventing us from doing any widening in that area is there's four bridges, four railroad bridges. Two of them are Union Pacific bridges. So we're going to combine those money to do those bridge widenings for the Union Pacific with this project, which is going to then allow us to do the widening underneath the interchange for 7200 South. So that's going to be done as part of that project. The SR-209, anyone know what SR-209 is? That's our code. So this is widening a lane in each direction, Redwood to I-15. 193 extension up in Davis. That goes pushing, if you know, the new road we built from basically I-15 going out to 20th, which is SR-108 for your education, to 20th West. This will be pushing a new road out to 30th West. And we've got $15 million programmed for that in 2021. One of the biggest freight issues we have in the state and congestion issues is on 5600 West. This is in the Salt Lake City area. And when we relocated for the commuter rail line, we relocated the intermodal center for Union Pacific from the yard in Salt Lake City out to a new intermodal yard here out that parallels I-80. And it's just west of 56, east of 56. And when they're building the trains, they're going back and forth, and they're blocking traffic. So this is to build a bridge over the railroad tracks there on 56. And then Porter Rockwell is a new facility that is being developed by Bluffdale. Environmental document is done, I understand. And it's right now planned for a 5-lane facility. We're re-looking at it as a 7-lane facility. It's going to essentially connect at Redwood Road on the west side, where Mountain View Corridor now comes and ties into. And it'll be another Bangor type of facility-looking facility that will then tie into I-15 by 143 South. And so the city's been building small pieces. They don't have the ability to build the bridge across the river. We're working with them on this right now. So this money here is to help with some of the costs that they've invested today, as well as the trying to move to. We expect or hope to have a jurisdictional transfer. So is this going to be part of your TIP amendment today?
Yes.
Yeah. For the commission, the Transportation Commission did not put this into the STIP. They're waiting until, because it's not a state road yet. They're waiting for the transfer to take place.
You want us to hold on that?
It's fine if the council wants to do that, Ben, and if and when we're able to reach agreement on a transfer, I think that will probably happen in the April timeframe. Okay. If we're able to make it happen, then the money would be approved. So that was quick. I'm just, if there's any questions on any projects.
Thank you, Carlos.
Thank you, Carlos.
Ben, anything else on this?
No.
Okay, then if there's no questions at all, Mr. Chairman, I would make a motion that we pass the resolution that is agenda item 5A in our package.
We have a motion and a second. Any more discussion on the motion? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
Okay, now we'll turn the time back to Ben, and Ben will explain some action that Transcom took in our November meeting.
Thank you, Mayor. So also, attached to your packet, you'll have a copy of the signed resolution from Transcom. Back when they met, there were three requests to modify the transportation improvement program. The first one was a request from Sandy City on 1300 East. This is for a pedestrian bike bridge that would go over 13th East. Initially, when this project was programmed, it was the tail end of the process and only partially programmed. At the time that this body approved it, it was under the understanding that we would charge the project sponsor, Sandy in this case, with going forward with the design and getting the project and everything up and ready. And then once the final costs were identified, then to come back and seek the additional funds. That's what they did. The additional funds needed for this project were $887,000 plus, for a total project cost of a little more than $3.1 million. The next two requests were for projects that are currently on the federal STP program, but the request was to exchange the funds from the federal to state dollars. That's something that we've done to seven other projects up in the Region 1 area. We've had pretty good success. We're still coming around to where we're completing a lot of those projects to where we can do a lessons learned, in which we'll come back with a report. But both of those projects, the one was in South Ogden on 40th Street from Washington Boulevard to Grand Mercy. And then the other one was an intersection up in Brigham City on 1100 West and SR 91 for a new intersection. Any questions on either one of these projects?
Okay, seeing none, thank you, Ben. Mr. Chairman, that ends our report for Transcom.
Thank you. Find where I am now. Next is air quality. Mercy Me.
Okay, our air quality team met supporting legislation requiring low NOx water heaters for installation and replacement. The low NOx burners cost about $150 more than the conventional water heaters. In the last 10 to 15 years, the state of our water heater reduces NOx emissions by 75%. And we all get really excited when we see all the cars on the highway. But look at all the chimneys that are coming out of your home. You know, those are gases that are adding to the air pollution significantly. So this is a new capability that will reduce nitrous oxide emissions by 75%. Sharp Refinery is committed to provide low sulfur tier 3 fuel to use on markets by 2017. Many of us went on a tour of the refinery. This is a multi-million dollar project that they're undertaking. They're not required by federal guidelines to do it because they're a small refinery. But they feel very strongly that it's going to make a big difference in a place like Salt Lake County and other parts of Utah, where we have inversions, and they did when the Indians were the only ones living here. They just didn't have knots and some of them to the side. So they are going to provide this low sulfur, tier 3 fuel for auto businesses. And I know the governor in his speech last night indicated he's working with the other refineries as well. And also, Tesoro announced that they will, what is the grant? They have given a grant, and I don't know the number, I read it in the paper this morning, to help people repair their vehicles if they're having emission problems with their low income, which is an amazing commitment. We have Rocky Mountain Power come and talk about their STEP program. The STEP program involves incentivizing electric vehicles by having charging stations that are everywhere that you need to go so that you don't ever have to worry about your battery dying. Curtailing power production during inversion conditions in places like downtown Salt Lake. And research and development that looks at dealing with wood-burning power generation, battery technology, and solar incentives.
Now, this is not carefully, each staff has not carefully examined and talked through and has gone through the public process. I was excited about hearing about this because they were cutting down on their coal burning generation, and they are looking at encouraging electric vehicle incentives so that you didn't have to worry about not being able to find a battery, a recharge station in Salt Lake and St. George or whatever. But I think there are a lot of questions, and I think we will hear more about this. There are questions to be answered in terms of rates, ratepayers, and looking at the technology. But to me, it's a wonderful start to have a utility that big willing to make some differences. So that was our meeting. You're all invited to come anytime.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a question. It seems like the home builders are resisting the water heaters situation. They're talking about not implementing some of the new building codes. Are you aware of that?
No.
It's an issue that we'll face, I think, at the legislative level because they want to keep the cost of building a home lower. So, again, something to be aware of.
Well, but I think you know what your payoff or your trade-off. You know, having more health problems in your family or your home a little lower.
Well, I won't comment further on that. I'm just telling you.
So maybe our committee needs to get involved with finding out what legislation there is out there and talking to those legislators.
Yes. And the League of Cities is there involved. In I'm not sure about the Association of Counties. Thank you, Mayor. Active transportation. Mayor Caldwell.
Active transportation, obviously a lot going on. Rapid growth. Your comments at the end of that. We are seeing an evolving appetite to see this be part of our communities. For those of you that weren't there yesterday, Utah League of Cities and Towns had the local officials day, and we had three speakers, Lieutenant Governor Cox, Speaker Hughes, and President Niederhauser, get up and talk about three main things: personal health, healthy communities, and quality of life. And in their comments and remarks, all three of them, none of them were prepared, spontaneously mentioned that active transportation was one of the important solutions in a pretty dynamic problem. But it really plays into all of those three things: personal health, healthy communities, and the quality of life we enjoy here in Utah. I did leave with an action item. Speaker Hughes had a funny comment when he was looking at President Niederhauser. He said, "I don't ride a bike, I'm a man. I got my driver's license when I was 16. And so, Andrew, I'd respectfully request that you leave one of these pictures on the tab open below of President Niederhauser, and I will get him on a bike this year. For the reprint, you can put a picture of Speaker Hughes on the cover of the Unified Transportation.
We'll put him on a tricycle.
If you put a basket with bells, we can do anything with it. But I did think it was unique last year with Prop 1. It was one of the first times that that had been allowed, and they used active transportation as part of the overall transportation funding. We're starting to see all of those key people in the legislature now talk about how important this is and how it's going to be part of the solution with our clean air and healthy communities. So I thought that was something unique I took away from that. We had our we had our active transportation meeting on January 13th. Committee and that reviewed the 2016 priorities, what we want to focus on in the upcoming year, and discussed proposed performance measures that will help guide the regional transportation plan. We also, the committee's focus through that was on the implementation of active transportation projects and improved tracking and counting of active transportation users. We see it, we know it's going on, but we don't have hard data to give back to help support some of what we're asking for. And so we have some, and we're looking at some tools to improve the tracking and counting of people that are using those active transportation corridors so we can continue to show that it's being embraced and it's really important that we continue to move with that. Also, upcoming this year, we have our mobile active transportation tours. I'd encourage anybody that's interested to come and get involved in those. We have a couple of unique ones. There will be two tour dates and coinciding with the active transportation meetings and a tour with the Utah League of Cities and Towns conference. And then there will also be a trip to a community that's doing a lot of unique things there in Boulder, Colorado. So we'll send updates and information as those come together and the plans for those come into place.
And then the Transportation Alternatives Program, the FAST Act, Wasatch Front Regional Council staff is recommending that 2 years of funding be allocated in the upcoming Transportation Alternatives Program, equaling about $3 million, committed to active transportation projects in the 2017 and 2018 funding years. So, Carlos, we'll put you on the project with President Niederhauser and Speaker Hughes.
We're
your
trying
bike
to get
guy.
The governor on a bike for bike month in May.
Very good. All right. Well, we'll all go to work on that. There's a lot going on. It's a very active community with very passionate people. Appreciate the staff leadership on that with Scott Hess and Jory and all the support we get from your crew at yourself. That's the report.
Thank you, Mayor. You're absolutely right. This is becoming a more and more popular way of people to transport themselves around the community. So I know we're doing a lot of this. I guess I'm going to have to go buy a bike. Now, item 8, the Executive Director's Report. Andrew?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a few items, and I'm going to tick through with you quickly. First, you all know that the FAST Act was recently passed by Congress and signed into law by the President, a 5-year surface transportation bill. The slide you look at up on the screen in front of you, the red line is what was going to happen if action wasn't taken, a drop off the cliff in federal transportation funding for highways and for transit and funds that go to locals. The yellow line was if we just sort of continued the status quo, inflation adjusted, and the blue line is what actually happened, the FAST Act. So I have to say, Carlos and Jerry, you know, I imagine that you would agree that this is better than what we were even reasonably hoping for. It's certainly not a big bump, but the fact that we have a program and have stability for the next 5 years without reductions and even with a tiny little increase is very good news. It allows us here in Utah to do our jobs without the threat of that cliff hanging over our head. We are likely to have to come back to you. I mean, there are some modest implications of this for WFRC's budget and our STP program. We're sorting that through, and we're likely to bring that back to you at the next council meeting. You know, nobody looking at this should get excited about there being lots of new money available, but at least we now have that stability and certainty so we can plan for what happens in the future and continue working with our great friends and partners at the federal government as we implement these programs. Okay? So any questions about the FAST Act?
Do any of you think that they will ever increase the gas tax?
Did you hear Mayor Seguin ask if we think they'll increase the gas tax? No, to be perfectly honest. I mean, it hasn't been modified since 1993, and the demand is there. And miraculously, they have managed to continue to cobble together funding year after year after year. Now, the problem is that what we've done is we've got 5 years of certainty now, great, but it projects out to the future the fundamental structural imbalance of the spending and the revenue source not supporting it. So, come 5 years out, we just have an even bigger problem to deal with. How does that get dealt with? Well, good news is now we've got another 5 years to try to figure that one out.
One of the programs that was funded was a grant program looking at a road usage charge pilots. Mm-hmm. And there's a fair amount of money they've put into this, and it's something that we're actually participating with the 17 western states. Oregon's really the lead on this in California, but I think there's a recognition that the gas tax is not a long-term financial solution.
Great point, Carlos. And we in Utah keep evaluating, in collaboration with our partners, various other funding or financing strategies. However, there's not a ton of optimism. I mean, maybe I'm being too pessimistic, okay? But in MAP 21, the last multi-year bill, there were commissions that were authorized to look at funding options, and you know, nothing really was implemented. So we'll see. We'll see. Okay, the next item that I have, this is a reminder about something that we're really excited about. Our region was selected by our national association, the National Association of Regional Councils, as the location of their 50th annual conference. Now, we've talked about this before, we shared this with you. Commissioner Milburn is a member of the board of directors of NARC. Truthfully, folks from all over the country wanted to do this big meeting here because of the cool stuff that is happening here in regional collaboration and in transportation and land use planning, and because it's a great place to visit, right? So that's coming up. They're doing their conference June 26th through June 28th, and we are piggybacking onto that with all of our partners, Envision Utah and the counties, and all of the other parties that are involved in the Wasatch Choice Consortium. So we'll do that on Thursday, June 29th. We're also going to supercharge it by rolling in the Active Transportation and Health Summit this year and create a lot of opportunities to talk about some of these themes that we've been hitting. And with the theme that we're sort of toying with now is active living through community design. So how are we designing our communities and building our infrastructure that helps address health and air quality and economy and good quality of life? So we'll be sending out more information about that, but June 29th, you know, if you haven't done so, mark it on your calendars now. Save that date. Okay. I'm just going to say one more thing, and that is we have a schedule in front of you of the meetings for the year. I know there's a lot of meetings and a lot of committees to do the work that we do, and you and many of your colleagues participate in those. The next council meeting is on March 24th. We have on February 25th, we have a new member orientation, which anybody, if you want to dig in and be like, what were those acronyms that you guys were talking about, or tell me more about that, everybody is welcome to attend that. We'll send information out about that. And let me just say that our first meeting of the year, Mr. Chairman and everybody else, how much we as staff appreciate all of your participation and involvement in the council and all the committees. I've said this over and over again. I'll say it one more time. Our objective is to help you. Our objective is to help you accomplish your desires and your dreams for your communities in a regional context. And so all of the staff that we have and the work that we do, the funding, it's all geared towards that, and we love doing it. Then the other thing I want to note, Mr. Chairman, is we've talked before about moving our office. Remember this? We've talked about this. We're still working on it. Okay?
And as I understood it, we gave you permission to start looking?
Yes, you did indeed. Thank you. Just as a reminder, we have to sell this building that we own and find another location, and the objective for us is to find a location that allows us to walk the walk, not just talk the talk, of multimodal transportation choices.
So we got a place in Ogden. We've got a couple, don't we, Mike?
Ooh,
we can bring you right in Ogden.
We're taking bids. So I will say,
and you ride your bike to work, so we'll make sure you can ride horses.
I love it. So our objective is to find a place that people can easily access from all over the region by multiple modes of transportation, and that is convenient for all of you when you come here, or there, wherever it is. But we need to sell this building first. I'm just saying that I really hope to not end this year without having that locked in. Okay? I'm not saying we're going to move this year, but to have that locked in. And I'm saying this as much for the staff, but we're like, Andrew, come on. Let's get this done.
Andrew?
Yes, sir.
Question? Do we actively have an agency trying to sell the building, or where are we at?
Good question. We do not. However, we've been having some conversations with knowledgeable real estate folks who are giving us some advice. We have not put the building on the market. I anticipate doing that in the relatively near future. And if anybody is, you know, a real estate person and wants to jump in and, you know, help us out and be an advisor or whatever, you know, we would love your assistance. So, okay, the last thing, Mr. Chairman, I have is I'm actually going to turn to Jerry. Everybody knows Jerry Benson, the interim CEO of UTA. And before I turn to him, I just want to say, Jerry was the director of operations for UTA. And I think that Jerry is really looking forward to the day when he can go back to being the director of operations for UTA. But I have to say that, my friend and colleague, Jerry Benson, has taken on a challenging task of being the CEO of this major organization at this crucial time. UTA is doing a lot of things internally to make sure that they're able to provide the best service possible to the community and have trust from the community. And they've been communicating about that to the public, and we wanted to give Jerry just 2 or 3 minutes to share some information about that with us. So, Jerry.
Thank you, Andrew, and thanks all of you for indulging me for just a few minutes. Many of you received an email from me last weekend, and then others saw, I'm sure, some of the full-page ads that the UG Board of Trustees took out to communicate some of these issues. What I will say is, when I was asked to step in as the interim president and CEO, job one for me, and the clear direction from our chair, David Burton, was to work on restoring public trust. And one of the things that I was aware of and then came to be more aware of is all of the work that the UTA Board of Trustees had been doing for the last 2+ years to take care of problems that had been raised as concerns in the community or that had been identified within the organization. And they've been working away quietly, but recognized that it was time to not be quiet about this. And so this current communication is really to let all of you and the public know that UTA is listening, is being sensitive to public concerns about things like development and land use and compensation and travel and how we operate as an organization. We focus on providing service, and we try to do a good job for the about 160,000 times that people get on our service every day. But honestly, we can't do a good job for all of you unless we have credibility and trust in the community. And so that's our effort right now. And I will say that I'm very proud of the work that our Board of Trustees has done. And, Commissioner Bell and Commissioner Milburn are here today, and Misha Christensen had to leave earlier, but I can tell you that I've been able to have a front row seat to the hard decisions and hard work the board's had to do to change things within the organization, change how we operate, and also change the rules for themselves, and to stand up and be accountable to each other and to the community. I'm really reassured to see the action that demonstrates the kinds of things that are outlined here as reforms that the agency from the board down through is really working hard to walk the talk as well as talking the talk, as you say. So this document, many of you were able to click through to this on our website, writeuta.com/trust. This information is there, along with some videos from our chair and vice chairs. And there's also information about compensation and the actual policies that have been put in place. So if any of you or any of your constituents are interested in some more detail about some of these issues, we've got it there. But I want to share that with you and answer any questions you have about any of the specifics here. Take your feedback about how we can continue to demonstrate that we take this seriously and that we're living and behaving in a way consistent with the values expressed here. Consistent with what you would expect of us. So we really value your support and partnership, and as I said, we want to be a valuable partner to you and recognize that we can only do that if we have credibility and trust in the community, and we're making steps to build that.
Jerry, thank you very much. I'll just, Mr. Chairman, just conclude by saying that what you're hearing from Jerry now is what I see within the organization, working with Jerry and the staff at UTA day in and day out. They are just hyper-focused on making sure that the organization is responsive to the needs of the community and really earning the trust of the community. It's a real thing. What you see from Jerry is real heartfelt from him and from the whole team there. So. Thank you, Jerry. Mr. Chairman, that concludes my report.
Last item, any other business that you'd like to bring forth in front of the board? Seeing none, entertain a motion to adjourn.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
No.